James Kershaw, attorney number 7438, for the appellant. When I was a young lawyer, I had the idealistic belief that a trial was a process developed by men of wisdom to get as close as possible to the truth. But the longer I practice law and the older I become aware of a second view, and that is a trial is a game, to be won no matter what the truth. The courts, both the trial courts and the appellate courts, seem to be enablers of that second theory. Trial courts fail to rein in that approach on the theory of judicial economy. They don't want a new trial, they don't want to declare a mistrial. Appellate courts, looking to uphold the verdict of the trial court, seem to go along with that approach, even if that approach is designed to keep the truth of what happened and what the facts are out of the process. This case is a classic example of that. Defense counsel knew that the concrete slabs where Ms. Geist fell had been altered at least twice since the date of her fall. The plan to make those alterations were begun before the fall occurred. We don't know whether December or January, but we know two subsequent repairs were made to that slab. Defense counsel knew that. She planned to introduce evidence of inspection of the defendant's property that occurred after the repairs, both through a HUD report and through their retained expert. She knew that she intended to cross-examine the plaintiff, who was 86 years old and suffering from the onset of dementia at the time of trial, that the condition of the property was the same on the date of her fall as on the date of the trial. Despite that, and despite the fact that that evidence was introduced, the jury, we believe the trial court committed error by allowing her to make that misrepresentation and keeping the jury from knowing the truth. The truth being that, in fact, the slabs of concrete had been altered on at least two occasions subsequent to the repair.
Counsel, when you say that the slabs had been altered, I understand that there was at least one of the slabs was replaced.
Correct.
But it's my understanding, and let me ask you if this is your understanding, that there was testimony on behalf of the defendant from several people that the height differential did not change, that there was no height differential on the date of the accident, and there was no height differential after these repairs took place.
There was testimony to that effect, and there was testimony that, in fact, the pads had been changed through a brick kit, and that the height differential at the date of the fall could be determined, but it wasn't present at the time of his inspection. And that's important. So on the day that Mr. Kidd testifies, it was prepared to testify, but couldn't testify because of the motion in limine, that the slabs no longer had a height differential, but by examining the repairs, you could see that there was a differential on the day of the fall in excess of the quarter of an inch required by the Housing Authority guidelines. Additionally,
so that there was a dispute as to whether or not there was a height differential on the date of the accident.
There was. And additionally, the defense, in opening statement, said that if there had been a safety issue, the defendant would have made immediate repairs. Now, there was two problems with that statement. Number one, it's not true. The Housing Authority testified that they would have to note a problem, they'd have to get their architect's permission, they'd have to run it through the budgeting process, and then they'd have to submit it to bid, so there's no immediate repair. But secondly, it disputes and calls into question the credibility of the defense witnesses that there was no height differential, because what we do know is they did make repairs to the slab on at least two occasions after the fall. So it goes to the weight of their credibility. That becomes important overall in this case.
Wouldn't that be true in every case where there's a subsequent repair?
It could be. I'm not sure that it's true in every case, because in many cases, the defense doesn't choose to say that it's the same now as it was then.
But it could be. I mean, but it is a, this is not unique to this case. This is a situation that could happen, and there's no exception in the, I mean, the rule is across the board, right?
Well, it could be in every case, I agree. And the rule doesn't prohibit this if it goes to credibility. The rule says it doesn't come in to show subsequent repairs to establish negligence. So it is admissible, actually, for other purposes, as are many rules for insurance, for example. In Carr versus Boyd, the Colorado Supreme Court in 1951, that's an older opinion, focused upon the truth-seeking aspect of the judicial system and held that the statement of counsel standing without support had the effect of damaging evidence. Here, not only were the statements made to the jury, but evidence was introduced of no subsequent change, and we were not allowed to introduce evidence that, in fact, there had been subsequent change. And the reason that's important is, in this case, the verdict in part hinges on causation. The jury finds Mrs. Geese, this did not cause her to fall. But the evidence that was introduced was that she continued to walk over this slab, this joint, and subsequent, and had not fallen. When that, in fact, goes to causation, this joint isn't so out of whack that it's going to cause you to fall, knowing that, in fact, one of the reasons it may not cause her to fall is the height now has been changed and the joint repaired. It also goes to the credibility, again, of the housing department people who take the position to the jury that's the same now as it was then. But if, in fact, the jury is, and then say, oh, by the way, Mrs. Geese on at least two occasions said that she fell on her own 2 feet, and of course, my reaction is everybody falls on their own 2 feet. The question is what causes you to fall on your own 2 feet. It goes to their credibility because those statements were, in fact, disputed. And the jury can look at the fact that the housing authority wasn't candid with them about subsequent repairs and determine whether they're being candid with them now about why Mrs. Geese fell. So it goes to the critical element of the truth-finding process here, and that is the jury shouldn't, we didn't inject this into the trial. The court made its ruling. We didn't indicate an opening statement that had been changed. We didn't indicate Mrs. Geese's examination that it had been changed. We went ahead and said the question is the condition on the date of the fall. The defense, because they felt it was to their advantage, interjected that it hadn't been changed, knowing that that wasn't true. And if we're in a truth-seeking process, the jury should have been advised of that fact, that in fact, despite that assertion, the concrete had been repaired twice, once fairly soon after and once in 2013, and the slabs were paired. And then when you determine whether this height differential was a cause and whether Mrs. Geese and her side, her witnesses were telling you the truth, you need to determine that the defense told you that wasn't true and attempted to leave that reason, attempted to hide that from you. I think the subsequent repairs is, to be quite honest, simple. The repairs by the housing authority's admission were planned before the fall. If they're planned before the fall, the rule doesn't even come into play.
So where in the record would you direct us where the housing authority conceded that the repairs were planned before the fall?
It was in, I would have to get this, and I will save that for rebuttal and start off my rebuttal with that comment, Your Honor.
Okay. Let me switch gears just a little bit then. It looks like causation was where the jury came down because they found that the defendant knew about a danger on the property and they checked that box saying as much. But how do we know, sitting here on appeal, what danger on the property they were talking about, because it refers to a danger on the property.
Well, there was only one danger that was testified about. That was a height differential in the slab. I mean, that was Mrs. Geese's testimony. That's the photos that were introduced. I mean, the problem is when we don't get to cross-examine the jurors, we only get to ask them general questions. So I think the court has to look at the totality of the record. What was the focus of the case? Where was the evidence? We weren't talking about something somewhere else. We're assuming that, if we're going to assume that the jury follows, is making a logical, reaching a logical conclusion, they're going to be focused about what the parties were talking about as a dangerous condition, which is, in this case, the height differential from the slab. Our expert, Mr. Kidd, for example, didn't talk about any other problem with the property. Mrs. Geese's son didn't talk about any other problem with the property. When Mrs. Geese talked to her two doctors and testified, she said it was the height differential of the slab as to why she fell. She didn't say it was something near the door or a crack halfway between the slab where the two, and I say slab, where the two slabs, the joint where the two slabs joined. So that's the only way I think the court can ever make that decision. You have to look at what all the evidence focused on, what all the facts focused on, and assume the jury was focused on, hopefully, what the lawyers and everybody else was focused on.
So all the evidence was focused on the point where she fell.
Right.
Okay. Mr. Crishell, let's assume that that is the case and the jury found that was a dangerous condition. There was also testimony that she had balance issues, that she was elderly, statements that she made to housing employees. How do we know the jury just didn't credit that with respect to causation?
Well, the question here is, was the height differential a cause? This is a facility that houses elderly and disabled people. They are going to have those kinds of issues. That's why the height differential here, to be honest, is not a lot. Quarter of an inch is the safety violation here by the Housing Authority's own standards. Would that be a height differential issue, safety problem at a college athletic facility or high school? No. But because these people have exactly what Mrs. Geese had, problems with dementia, onset, problems with balance, problems with their knees and their backs, and problems, as I get to be there, with old age, they have balance issues. That's why this differential is so small in this case, I'll be quite honest. And that's why HUD has these regulations for these kinds of facilities. And the evidence is, yes, she had these problems, but she tripped at the joint, which is described as a tripping hazard if it's more than a quarter of an inch.
And Cassie, you have 2 minutes.
I'll save my 2 minutes to find the court's location in the record.
Thank you.
Good afternoon. Sophia Tsai on behalf of the Pueblo Housing Authority, registration number 32998. I want to start by saying nobody in that courtroom at the trial court level treated this as a game. We got to a jury trial because it was a factual dispute and we needed to present the facts to the jury and have them listen to it and tell us what they decided was the truth. What happened in this case is that there was evidence presented at trial that supported a number of outcomes, and the one that the jury came to is what you pointed out, was that there was a danger on the property and that the Housing Authority failed to act reasonably with respect to whatever that danger was, but that ultimately that danger was not the cause of Ms. Geese's fall or her injuries. The arguments that are presented by the appellant in this case are based upon his very singular view of what should have happened at trial and how the court should have interpreted things and ruled. But this doesn't provide a basis to reverse the outcome at the trial court level. The difference of opinion that we had at the trial court and that we clearly have at this point in time doesn't support the accusations of misconduct that he keeps throwing around, and it certainly does support the verdict that we received from the jury and the outcome at the trial court. I want to touch briefly on the issue of a danger that the jury found. It's definitely true that the focus of the trial was on the joint between two slabs of concrete, where the dispute was whether there was an up to a half inch height differential, as evidence was presented from Ms. Geese, or whether that joint was flush, from which there was testimony from numerous witnesses on behalf of the housing authority. In fact, the supervisor of the property had said that she stuffed her foot over that in order to check for height differentials and didn't find one. However, through the evidence that was introduced showing the area, there were also in the photographs things that the jury could have hinged a danger other than that specific joint as the dangerous condition that they were talking about. There were photos of cracks and spalling. There was testimony of cracks and spalling, as well as a drainage issue about 10 feet to the left. You can see in one of the photographs, and I apologize, I don't have the specific exhibit letter. But there are other issues in the area that the jury could have said, well, that was a danger, but was not the cause of her fall because it is in a different location. With respect to the statements that were made in opening statement, again, I submit to you that this is a difference of opinion. In opening statements, I would point out that at that point in time, there was a pending motion in limine as to whether there would be evidence submitted, and there was anticipated to be evidence from Ms. Geese because of her deposition testimony that the condition of the joint, referencing the height differential, not whether it was the same concrete on one slab or the other, but whether the height differential at that joint was the same on the day that she fell as it was at the time of trial. That testimony came first from Mrs. Geist, in that she said there was a half-inch height differential then, there was a half-inch height differential at the time she testified. And I think that was actually through her deposition, is how that testimony came in. So it's not necessarily whether it was the exact same slab that was there on the day of her fall, but it was whether that height differential was the same. Ms. Geese, as I mentioned, testified with respect to Exhibit N, which was a photograph of that joint, and she testified, that joint, that's where I fell, that's what I tripped over. That photograph of Exhibit N shows that there's a half-inch height differential, and that is how it is today, at the time of her deposition. Because as Mr. Kroschel mentioned, she was having some memory issues at the time of trial. As a matter of law, whatever the decision is with respect to if there were any misstatements, and I submit that there were none, there was no misstatements, no misconduct, certainly not the intent that Mr. Kroschel keeps trying to impose on this case. A new trial isn't warranted in this case. It's not warranted in cases where there are no improper statements and where the jury's passion and prejudice are not incited. We don't have that here. Under the cases of Ordovies and Blood, a new trial is only warranted based upon some misstatement of counsel, presuming that there was one, where there's actual misconduct, and when that conduct engenders prejudice that denies the other party a fair trial. We don't have that here. She wasn't denied a fair trial. We have 3 days of testimony, and the jury's decision is soundly based upon the evidence that was presented at trial. And in fact, under the Blood versus Quest case, when counsel does ask improper questions and references evidence that isn't admissible, a new trial isn't always warranted unless the statements that were made were sufficiently prejudicial. And again, we don't have that in this case. The attempts that counsel has made to try to distinguish Ordovies and Blood in the reply brief, I don't think they apply here. Ordovies specifically dealt with counsel's statements of facts concerning matters that were not admitted or established by the evidence, and under those circumstances, holds that a mistrial is appropriate only if the prejudice, as I said before, denies the constitutional right to a fair trial.
Ms. Dye, excuse me, can you point us to anywhere in the record where there was evidence that this repair was in place or planned prior to the fall?
My recollection of the record, actually, I can't. The suppressed portion of the record was a page from Vida Harbor's deposition, and it said, I don't know. Her testimony was when she was asked when the plans were initiated, she said, I don't know. She couldn't say.
Thanks.
And that's what I can recall from the record that addresses that issue.
Can I ask a question?
Yes.
So there was a new slab put in after the event?
Yes.
But that slab was not put in to correct any problem at the joint, is your position?
Correct.
So would 407 even apply under those circumstances? It wasn't a corrective measure with regard to the accident.
Ultimately, what the trial court found was because of that issue, the repair wasn't relevant. And I think it also implicates 403 in that we do have a risk of defeating the purpose of 407 by having the jury decide that, well, you did replace something, and therefore it must have been because you were negligent in the first place. I still think it...
But the court also cited under Rule 401 and 402 it wasn't relevant?
Yes. Now, with respect to Blood versus Quest, when counsel tried to argue that it doesn't apply in this case, I submit that it does. Blood concerned statements that were made during opening statements at trial that potentially referenced evidence that was not to be admitted pursuant to a pending order in limine. My reading of that case is that it appears that the trial court at that time had not yet ruled on that motion in limine and subsequently did. And upon receiving that order in limine, counsel could rephrase the questions to try to comply with the order in limine. And notwithstanding that, had asked a limited number of improper questions throughout the 8-day trial. And admission of this court held that under those circumstances, that is not an abuse of discretion. It is not an abuse of discretion to deny a mistrial under those circumstances. In this case, it's a very similar circumstance if we take what Mr. Herschel alleges to be true. There were no improper statements. There was no prejudice. Ms. Geese was not denied her constitutional right to a fair trial. And even if some of that happened, a new trial isn't warranted under the standard that's set forth under Ortiz and Blood.
Because I have a question about the exhibits. I'm not sure our record's entirely complete. I saw some exhibits introduced that appeared to show the joint at the time of the fall. There was a leaf or some sticks across it.
Yes.
Were there any photos introduced after the repairs were made or not? Was that per the court's order prohibiting that evidence and testimony?
I do not believe that there were any photos admitted showing after the repairs.
It was just at the time of the fall is when we have the visuals.
Yeah, that's my best recollection. And in fact, I know Mr. Worston had photos in his report. Mr. Kidd had some photos. There may have been photos from associated with Mr. Kidd's deposition because his testimony was presented through his deposition. But I do not remember at this time. I know Mr. Worston, who was the Housing Authority's engineering expert, testified that yes, he did do a site inspection after the case had been filed, which was after the repairs had been made. But he specifically testified, my opinions with regard to the condition of the joint at the time of her fall are based upon the photographs that were taken before the repairs, so immediately after the fall itself.
And those are in the record?
Yes. With respect to the court's decision on refusing to allow evidence of subsequent repairs, whether there was subsequent remedial measures or not, I submit that is not an abuse of discretion by the trial court. As we've discussed, they were not relevant because they addressed another issue, and they did serve the risk of confusing the jury and being unduly prejudicial for the reasons that we've already talked about. And particularly because these reasons, the repairs were done for issues other than the ones at issue in this case, other than that specific joint where Ms. East claims that she fell, admitting evidence of those repairs would severely undermine the purpose of Rule 407, which is to encourage those desirable repairs that we hope that our public entities will make by assuring them that precautions taken after a fall such as this one will not be admissible to prove their negligence. In briefing, Appellant argued that those repairs should have been admissible to rebut evidence of a subsequent inspection. However, and that's the HUD inspection. The HUD inspection was introduced because that occurred shortly later in the year in 2011. It was, and before any repairs were done. And the HUD inspection came in to show that even after that HUD inspection, the Housing Authority had no notice that there was any height differential at that joint because this was a senior housing facility, such a height differential would have been called out by HUD. It's something that they would have pointed out. And so it goes to an essential element of the claim that was being presented, which is whether there was notice of the defendant of the issue. As I see I'm running short on time, I'd like to move on to the third issue that was raised on appeal, which is the issue of the court's denial of plaintiff's motion for judgment notwithstanding the verdict. As you know, the standard for deciding whether judgment should enter notwithstanding the verdict is based upon considering the evidence in the light most favorable to the verdict itself, and it's only appropriate when there's absolutely no evidence supporting the jury's verdict. In this case, there were photographs of the area, and as you noted, the jury did find that there was a danger. I don't dispute that there was sufficient evidence to find that there was a danger. There were photos of cracks, there were photos of another area, there was testimony that there were drainage issues in that area. There was also testimony and photographs that a picnic table had been moved so that the path was slightly altered from the usual path because users had to walk around the picnic table in a different route that they usually would have walked. The biggest issue here is causation. As has already been discussed this afternoon, there was evidence that plaintiff tripped over her own feet. She told this to two of the housing authorities on two separate occasions. The jury was able to view Ms. Geese and her condition at the time. There was medical testimony that she had chronic balance issues, had seen the doctor several times because of her balance issues, and that was Dr. Dodds who had testified at trial. And
can I just ask a question like that?
Yes.
Is there a different a standard involved when you have, it was, as I understand it, was a home for elderly folk, and she was probably not unique with having these issues. Does that not change the standard of care?
I think it depends on how you look at it. I don't think it ultimately changes the standard of care in that you're going to act as a reasonable person would under the same or similar circumstances.
But the circumstances here are fairly specific to a frailer population.
Yes, but I think that brings us back to the issue of was there a height differential? Ultimately, the quarter-inch height differential that we keep talking about comes back to an ADA standard. And the evidence that was presented on behalf of the Housing Authority was that there was no height differential at that joint, which I would submit does fall within the reasonable care standard under the realm of acting reasonably. I might briefly conclude just that I submit that there was no error by the trial court and that the jury's verdict and the outcome of this case should be affirmed. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Mr. Koshaw, you have approximately 2 minutes left.
Yes, the record on where the statement is that these repairs were planned before the fall is in R-S-U-P-R, Deposition of Vita Harbor, page 36, lines 5 through 12.
And do you have it there in front of you? Can you read to us what it says?
I do not. I just have a cite to the record.
So that was in the brief?
That is in the brief. It's okay. In the reply brief at page 2, the specific site.
Okay.
Couple of things I want to cover. Mrs. Geese. Mrs. Geese's deposition was taken a few months before trial, after both sets of repairs had been made. When that question was asked, the defense counsel knew that the slabs had been changed, even though Mrs. Geese was incorrect. I couldn't even correct my client based on the court's motion in limine. Mrs. Geese, aren't you wrong? Because actually, those slabs repairs had been made there or changes had been done to those slabs. Secondly, in response to your question, Your Honor, Mr. Kidd introduced photos of how he determined that there was a height differential. And he got down with the device and measured it like this. He had to do that, and this was omitted from the deposition, because of the subsequent repair. You could no longer see the same things in the photo that you saw before because the joint had been changed. And he had to explain that this is how I determined it. But he couldn't say the reason I had to do that was because they put in a new adjoining slab. The jury had to assume that that was the condition of the slab when he took those photos as of the date of the fall. The HUD report was done after the first set of repairs, but before the second set of repairs. And that, I think, is crucial. I think if you look at the date, I think it was in October, Mr. Royston, in his report, clearly indicated that his inspection of the site was important in after all the repairs, important in him formulating his opinions. So we believe that that evidence should have been admitted. It goes to a crucial issue, and that the verdict should be over. The case should be sent back to the trial court.
Thank you, counsel, and thank you both for your fine arguments. The case will stand submitted, and an opinion will issue in due course.